The following podcast is from the weekly message at Summit Church in Upstate South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
And allow me to add my welcome to the other welcomes you've received today. If you're a guest, thanks so much for joining us at Summit Malden. My name's Jason, one of the elders and teaching pastors here at Summit. I have the opportunity to be here at Summit Malden most Sundays. I've been gone the last two. I taught at Summit Spartanburg. And then last Sunday was away with our elders and wives. We yearly take a retreat together and process through how the Lord desires to continue to lead us as a church family. But if you are a guest, thanks so much for hanging out. I've missed you. Those of you that are regulars, if this is your place, missed seeing you over the last couple of weeks. I actually get the opportunity to be here three straight Sundays, and so I'm very excited about that. The elder retreat was wonderful. I know many of you were praying for us as we were away. And I've said this before, but I think now seems like a good time to say it again. when we get together as elders, we process through, part of our retreat is we process through the same spiritual formation questions that we process through in our life groups, which all of our elders are a part of, and in other environments around Summit, which we value. I love the fact that when we gather as elders on a retreat, that part of our time together is asking questions of one another about our own spiritual formation, our own time with the Lord, how we're stewarding our life, our family, our marriages, how we're using and want to continue to use our spiritual gifts. Are we actually leaning well into biblical community? Who are we as elders here? Who do we have intentional relationships with in our circles of accountability that may not know the Lord? And how are we being intentional for praying for those people and being intentional with those people? So I do love the fact that the leadership here, and it's a desire of ours, always has been, models what it is that we're constantly calling other people to, and to get away with those guys and spend a couple of days together processing through that is wonderful. That's not all we do. We also get the chance to pray and process through a little bit of the future. Many of you will remember at the beginning of 2018, it's hard to believe we're almost 2 years in, but at the beginning of 2018, we shared with all of you what we call around here Vision 2030. I don't know if you remember, it was a little booklet that looked a little bit like this, and everyone got a copy, and I'm sure you still have them. And it's probably on your coffee table, I would assume. Brandon, is that where yours is, on your coffee table? Where do people come over? Hey, are you interested in Vision 2030 of some... Yes, so the important things that are right there. And so, you know what was fun, actually? When we laid out this 12-year vision, one of the and goals that we had for Summit, underneath each one of those, we put a few specific things that in the next 2 years we were praying that the Lord would do. And to be able to sit around the table with the elders while we were away last weekend and walk through that and to see that the Lord had answered almost every one of those, almost everything. I think there was one or two that we didn't put a check mark beside. The rest of them, the Lord in his kindness and grace has been moving and leading, and we're incredibly thankful for that. And in the weeks and months to come, we're going to be laying out the next two or three things that we can specifically be praying towards the Vision 2030. And so we're really excited about that. So I've missed you, but that's what we've been up to. You can be praying for our pastoral staff team. We leave this afternoon for a conference with the Christian Missionary Alliance, who we're affiliated with as a church once a year, usually in October. They do a conference, and we go to that, and it's going to be held down on the coast of South Carolina. Our conference, our district is Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina, the South Atlantic District. If you abbreviate that out, that's going to be the SAD District. I've pointed it out to them and think they should rename it. But one of the things I love about our team, so all 10 of our pastoral team will be there for the next couple of days. And one of the things I love about Summit team is their willingness to step into those environments with other pastors and be an encouragement to them. We're encouraged, don't get me wrong. It's not like we don't get any encouragement. We do. But to see how our team loves on those pastors and prays for them and steps into those environments is always a huge encouragement to me. So you join us in prayer for that, that we would be an encouragement, that we'd be encouraged, but that we'd be an encouragement there with the Christian Missionary Alliance. And I haven't done this yet, and he didn't know I was going to do it, but I just wanted to say it because I haven't been here for 2 weeks, and it's just happened within the last couple of weeks. Speaking of the Christian Missionary Alliance, your good friend, my good friend, worship pastor here at Summit Church, Mr. Grayson Cato, over the last year has gone through the ordination process with the Christian Missionary Alliance, and he has been officially ordained. Are you in here, Grayson? Nice round of applause for this guy. Where are you? There he is, right there in the back. Not only him, but a handful of other guys on our team. If you'll remember last year, Nathan went through that process. The reason we give a little clap there and applause because just simply because it was a whole lot of work. It was a year's worth of reading and meetings, and then for the final pass, it's you go in and there's five or six other pastors who ask you theological questions for an hour and a half that you answer, and all you take in with you is the scriptures, which is a good thing to take in with you, and you answer their questions, and it's a good group of guys. I'm thankful for them, but Grayson, kudos to you, buddy. At the end of January in 2020, much like last year, we'll have a night of worship. Everybody will come together for that. And part of that is we'll just be recognizing these guys and be able to pray over them as they continue their role of leadership here at Summit Church, which we're incredibly thankful for. We're kicking off a brand new series this morning. Nice slide behind me. We're going to be studying through the book of Jonah over the next 7 weeks. If you're newer with us here at Summit, we are usually working our way through a book of the Bible. We might stop at certain times and do a little mini-series on a topic, but our favorite and preferred thing to do on Sunday morning is to teach through books of the Bible. And so we're really looking forward to our next few months together on Sunday mornings processing through the book of Jonah. If you have your Bibles, you can go ahead and open them there. As you turn there, though, I kind of wanted to start our time by asking you a question that you don't have to answer out loud, just in the quietness of your seat in your mind. How do you respond when what you want and what God wants aren't sames? How do you respond when what you want and what God wants aren't sames? I would tend to think for most of us in the room, if not all of us, we've experienced that at some point in time in life. Like, you have an idea, I have an idea about how things should go, how things should be going, and for reasons that you don't fully understand or comprehend, things aren't going like you think they should be going. And part of the wrestle might be you really do believe that God is sovereign. Yeah, you believe that God is in control, but the way things are playing out, you just don't like it. And often, not only do you not like it, even though you do believe he is sovereign, and actually because you think he is sovereign, he could actually change what's going on, but he's not changing what's going on. He's not doing the right thing from your perspective or from my perspective. And what I've discovered through the years in my own life and as I've walked with a whole lot of people is if we're not careful, we can begin to question whether or not God is actually good. And then to make it even maybe more confusing for you, you look at other people, and as you observe other people, their lives aren't actually going like they would draw it up either, but they aren't questioning the goodness of God. You hear people say, when you look at their life and things aren't going like you know they would draw it up, you hear them saying things like, I've experienced something in my walk with God that is great, and that I would have never experienced if I didn't walk through what God has walked me through. Like, I never would have signed up for it to walk through it. Like, I wouldn't have drawn it up this way. And at the same time, Jason, I wouldn't trade it. And it's interesting because while a lot of people respond that way, that's not everyone's response. Your normal response could be, I'm just kind of ticked. I'm just kind of angry. I'm incredibly hurt. I'm kind of done with it. I'm going to walk away. And as a pastor, I've walked with many people through some really hard, confusing, frustrating, angry, doubting types of things. In some ways, it's a part of what I signed up for as a pastor. I get that. My guess is you've walked with people through that too. Maybe not at the same regularity, I guess, as I do. That's fine. But as I spend time with people and they invite me into what could be perceived as hardships, questions, frustrations, anger, one of the things I've discovered is this. When you and I mistrust the goodness of God because of the circumstances of life, you can often end up running from the only one who has given you true goodness and true life. When you and I mistrust the goodness of God because of the circumstances of life, often you and I can end up running from the only one who has given you true goodness and given you true life. Now, with that being said, and we've got a whole 7 weeks to talk about this, I'm excited about it, I want to give you a bit of background on this Jonah fellow. Not sure how much you know. I don't want to take for granted that you know more than you do. So let me give you a few details before we jump into Jonah chapter 1 today. We actually first read about Jonah in 2 Kings 14. And we learn there that Jonah was a prophet, so sharing with people things God had said. And he was a prophet during the same time, during the time of Israel's king Jeroboam II. And there were some other prophets also around during the same time, Amos and Hosea. If you recall, we studied through Hosea last fall. What's interesting is that Amos and Hosea, in their prophecy, had really rebuked and challenged the kings of the day in Israel for their unfaithfulness to God. They had warned them, I don't know if you remember this when we went through Hosea, had warned them about cozying up to other nations like Assyria. Warned them that, listen, if you cozy up to these other countries, it's not going to work out well for you. And if you read the story, you know that it doesn't work out well for them because Assyria does end up attacking Israel. And Jonah is all for King Jeroboam's. He's putting in a newer, military policy to fight back against Assyria, regain their power, regain their influence. And we'll have the opportunity a little bit, I guess, as we study through to learn a little bit more about the Assyrians, what they're up to. They had an incredibly, if you read about everything that Assyria did, this sounds so trite, but they had a horrible reputation. And as I was doing reading and studying on this, I didn't want to list out, that's not the point. My point isn't to list out everything Assyria did. But if you go read historically, there's a whole lot of evil, gory, bloodthirsty, cruel, and evil things that they were known for. And you may go, so why all the historical background? I'm going to get to that, but let's go to Jonah 1, verse 1. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me. But Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. It says he went down to Joppa, found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare, and he went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. So we'll stop right there for a second. So Nineveh, the city that Jonah is told by the Lord to go and prophesy in, is the capital city of the Assyrian Empire. Okay? The same Assyrian Empire that has ripped the northern kingdom of Israel to shreds. And to put it mildly, Jonah wasn't too excited about what the Lord had said to him, was not very excited about the mission that the Lord had given to him to go and prophesy in this city to a people that some would have called the equivalent of terrorists. Come on, Lord. This has to be a joke. I can't believe that you would call me to do this. Because you see, oftentimes what you are thinking would be best and what the Lord's actual plans are aren't sames. And so Jonah does what many people through history have done when they don't kind of like it, when they're not really for it, when it doesn't really excite them. Not only does it excite them, it incredibly discourages them, makes them angry, makes them frustrated, makes them doubt. He starts going the opposite direction of where the Lord had told him to go, because he doesn't agree with what it is that the Lord had said. Now, I want to hit pause here and say, I think a lot of us can actually relate to Jonah's response, right? Sometimes I think, depending on your background, where you grew up, church you grew up in, whatever the case may be, I think sometimes Jonah, how shall I say this? I think he gets piled on. Right? Do you ever do that when you read through the Bible and you read a story about someone in Scripture and you go, what an idiot. Like, I just can't believe. But if you stop long enough and you think well enough, what you might be able to do is go, yeah, I can relate to, yeah, right? Because when God says, this is what I want you to do, and you get up and go the opposite direction, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, I bet some of us, as we look back over the history of our life, we go, yeah, been there, right? I'm not interested in doing what you have put before me. And so as we jump into this study, you might be interested to see and learn from Jonah, and we will see and learn some things from Jonah. But I actually want to tell you what I believe from studying is this really isn't all that much about Jonah. Now, I get it. I mean, he's in the book. And there are some things that we can learn. But I want to remind you from the beginning, and we're going to keep coming back to it over and over again. This is really about God. As a matter of fact, we've called the series Jonah, : our gracious and merciful God. Even here in this first verse, I don't know if you picked up on it or not, but you see how the book begins. The book begins with God having the first word. And I don't want to teach everything this morning because we've got 7 weeks, but I'm going to go ahead and give you a little bit of a preview. When you get to the very end, at the end of chapter 4, God also gets the last word. And God gives commands, and he sends a storm, and he sends a fish, and he commands the fish, and he provides a vine, and he sends a worm. 7 weeks, it's going to be great. Come back for all of that if you're unfamiliar. And even if you are familiar, I'd still love for you to come back. God is up to something. And he, I believe, is sending a message to Israel through his interaction with Jonah. And to the Ninevites through the message of Jonah. Okay, back to Jonah's response to God's command for him to go to Nineveh. Because what's interesting to me as I looked at it, it's not just like... You know, he's a prophet, and so he's given the word. It's not just like he said, nah, I'm good. I don't really want to do that. I don't really feel like it. Like, I hear you, God. Maybe, like, if you could find somebody else, that'd be ideal. Do you ever, all right, sometimes in church ministry, like, you ask people to do, like I say, if you could find anybody, I mean, I'm not saying I won't do it, but if you could check with everybody else first, and then if you still really need me, could you get back to me on that? This is the reason in some ways it's relatable, right? He actually goes, did you pick up on this? He actually goes the opposite direction, which I think not only shows us his issue with the assignment, I don't want to go there. I think it also shows that he's got an issue with the one who's giving him the assignment. And on different levels at different times, I would say that, again, this is the reason it's relatable. It's not like you look at Jonah and go, I don't get that. Like, I think that we can all relate to that. And it plays out in different ways in our lives. I get it. But it could be the medical report that comes back that we weren't anticipating. Or the relationship that we thought was going to bring us lifelong joy and happiness that falls apart. Or the job that we felt certain was meant for us and we wound up not getting it. And I say all of this, and I'm going to keep coming back to it, because I think when you talk about a big fish swallowing someone, it can seem so non-relatable. But I think it is, because at its core, Jonah is questioning, does God know best? Does God know what he's doing? And everyone who has ever walked this planet has processed through that and has wrestled through that. Listen, you go all the way back, right? You know the story. Go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, the very first humans, Adam and Eve. Does God know best? And interestingly enough, just like Adam and Eve, Jonah tries to hide. He attempts to flee. So interesting. He attempts to flee from what? Look back at verse 3. What does he attempt to flee from? What does it say there? The presence of the Lord. There's another biblical text already said this morning outside of Jonah where the same expression of flight is used. Psalm, I just want to read it to you in Psalm 139. I want to read it again. O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and you know when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. You hem me in behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness as light to you. You can't get away. And it's so interesting. You know that to be true, and I know that to be true, but isn't it interesting how many people think that they can and how oftentimes you think that you can or have thought that you could? Look back at verse 4. of chapter 1. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his God, and they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship, and he had lain down, and it was fast asleep. Verse 6 says, so the captain came and said to him, what do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call out to your God! Exclamation point. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish. Side note, and I didn't ask God for it, but the rain in the midst of this, that's raining right now, is just, it's great. It's great effect. You're thinking it, I'm thinking it, I was just going to say it. I like to call it out. So well, this is interesting. God hurls a great wind and storm. That word hurled is the same word for like hurling a spear. And things start to get really interesting. Think about this for just a second. Like, don't just think, yes, storm. No, think about a storm that makes full time, always on the water, sailors freak out because it's such a strong storm. Now, that's a storm. They thought that the ship was going to be ripped apart. Now, that's a storm. It says the sailors were calling out to their gods. That's how scared they are. And you contrast that with Jonah in a couple of ways. One, instead of freaking out, he's fast asleep in the bottom of the ship. And secondly, instead of leading the way in prayer, he's being told by those who don't know the Lord to pray to his God. Now think about that for a minute, because this is very interesting to me. What did Jonah not want to do? Answer, he did not want to go to Nineveh and tell the pagans of the Lord's impending judgment. So he runs the other way, goes the other way, the opposite direction, goes down and down, right? Goes away and goes down, and goes down into the ship, and goes all the way down to the bottom of the ship, and here we go. He runs the other way, only to find himself in a boat full of pagans. Exactly right. Oh, the irony. And it's interesting to me, just a side note, don't think it's the main point for today, but I'm just going to throw it out there for you. It's interesting to me that in the midst of people perishing, he's fast asleep. Caught up in his own thoughts, caught up in his own disappointment with God. And I think there are probably some things that we as followers of Jesus could learn about that in the world in which we find ourselves living. Verse 7 says, and they said to one another, the fishermen, the mariners, come, let us cast lots that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us. So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. And they said to him, tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation? Where do you come from? What is your country? And of what people are you? They've got several questions. And he says in verse 9, well, I'm a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. Verse 10 says, then the men were exceedingly afraid, and they said to him, what is this that you have done? There's another exclamation point right there. For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. So, the sailors determine that someone has done something wrong to anger the gods. And this storm has come up, right? And I want to hit pause here because, again, I'll hit pause here. Some of you would go, Jason, now tell me how this works. Because we do see Jonah go the opposite way of where the Lord had told him to go, and now there's this big storm. And I'm not going to take time today to work it all out, but I do want to think about it just, I want to say something briefly. We've got more time, I'll tell you in a minute. This idea of sin, doing the opposite of what it is that God has said, and difficulties in life. So, this is important for me, for you to hear me say. Not every difficulty that we walk through in life is a result of sin in our life, okay? I want you to know that. You can read the book of Job, and you will find the folly of that way of thinking and what God has to say about it. And there's some other places as well, obviously. At the same time, I do want to be very clear on this. If you choose to walk in sin and disobedience, you will have difficulty in life. If you choose to walk in sin and disobedience, you will have difficulty in life. Here's what I'm saying. You can't do whatever you like in regards and live what I would say is a life of selfishness and not think it will not have negative ramifications on your life. It obviously will. So we need to think, I do think we need to think well about this. That we regularly listen well to the Spirit of God to examine our hearts and minds. There are multiple examples, both biblically and in your own life, where storms, if you want to use that word, are happening in life, and they aren't because of sin, right? And then there are other storms in life that are ramifications of poor sinful choices. And again, maybe it's a part of what I do full-time vocational ministry where I'm just around it more, observing it. I will say this to you today, no matter where you sit, whether it be in a storm of life because you live in a fallen world that is messed up, or maybe today you sit and you're riding out a storm and you go, no, like I can point to significant choices that I've made along the way. In either instance, the Lord can use the storm to show you more about himself. Did you hear me? He can use the storm to show you more about himself, more about his mercy, more about his grace, more about his provision. The reason I said I won't get into a bunch of it today is because in the new year, we're going to be studying through the life of Joseph and this idea of suffering and the sovereignty of God. We're going to take several weeks on it. I'm really looking forward to it. But it is interesting in this moment what takes place in this conversation with Jonah and the sailors. They ask some questions, and when he wakes up from his nap after concluding not only had he had something to do with this, right? The fact is, someone who had something to do with this was Jonah. Look back at verse 8. Then they said to him, "Tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation? Where do you come from? What is your country? And of what people are you?" So they ask him some questions about his identity. They want to find out about his God that they had encouraged him to pray to. They were all praying to their gods, right? So whoever, you got a God. You pray to your God. We're praying to our God. And it's interesting because Jonah begins to share just a little bit in the midst of all this that's going on. What does he say? "Well, I'm a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the land." And the sailors had been crying out to their gods to no avail, so maybe Jonah's will listen up and bail us out. And you see that in verse 11. "Then he said to them, 'What shall we do to you that the sea may be quiet, that it would quiet down for us?'" For the sea was growing more and more, right? Like, this is an interesting interaction to me. This is what Jonah said. Like, "Who are you?" And Jonah basically says, I worship the God that I'm currently disobeying who's got all this going on. That's basically how it breaks down. I worship the God that I'm currently disobeying that has all of this going on. And in some ways, it seemed, wouldn't it be like, if I'm a sailor, like it would, that day, like that would seem like odd and disingenuous. But again, I think for some of us in the room, like, I think this might be relatable, right? For some of you, the fact may be that you show up week after week into this environment, let's say, to offer worship, yet choosing not to do what very clearly the Lord has called you to do. So it's not unrelatable, is it? It's just we aren't currently in the middle of a hurricane. And even in the middle of this conversation, it's interesting to me that it's the sailors kind of taking the lead. Because what do we do? Like, Jonah's not really offering anything up unless he's getting asked, right? He's kind of quiet unless they start asking him some questions. "Oh, yeah, well, I'll tell you a little bit about myself." Well, what do we do now? Like, if you worship the one and all this is going on, what do we do? In verse 12, look at it. What does he say? "He said to them, 'Pick me up and hurl me into the sea. And then the sea will quiet down for you.' For I know, interesting, get a little what he says right here. For I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you. Nevertheless, look at verse 13, really great. Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. Yeah? So Jonah does realize, based on what he's saying here, that his disobedience has brought this storm. So he says, throw me overboard. Now, some of you would ask, and I would as well, why would he say that? Like, why is that the plan? And there are a few views on that, right? One, some would say he just wants to end his life. Some say he would rather die than obey God. Some would say it's because he cares for the sailors more than he cares for his own life. And I think we probably get a better understanding of how all this is playing out in Jonah's mind as we continue to go through our study. I just, for now, here's what I want to say. I find it interesting what the sailors do. Did you pick up on it? They don't just chunk him overboard. I mean, they're going to get to that. But before they do, it says they tried even harder to get to shore. There is a contrast here between the prophet Jonah, who says he worships the Lord, yet, as we see here, walks in disobedience, and the sailors. Jonah sleeps while bringing a storm upon them, and then they try to save him. And I believe, and we'll see it play out here in just the next verse or two, it's because they're coming to realize that who Jonah said the Lord was, the Lord was. Look at verse 14. Verse 14, therefore they called out to the Lord, O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not on us innocent blood for you, O Lord. Have done as it pleases you. Verse 15 says, so they picked up Jonah, they hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, yeah, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. So, the sailors acknowledged the Lord's sovereignty and providence in the midst of the storm, and when they throw Jonah over, the storm stopped. It ceased, and it says they feared the Lord. Why? Well, one, it was really nice of Jonah to articulate who it is that he worshiped before he got chunked over. But what they observed and saw is that their gods could not do what the Lord had just done. And it's interesting, it says here that they made a sacrifice and vows to the Lord. They use the word Yahweh, the personal Hebrew name that speaks to a personal relationship with the Lord. And what's interesting is they're making these vows not in the midst of the storm, but after the storm, right? So some of you maybe could relate to this as well, because you know people, maybe you've done this as well, where you're making all kinds of deals with God in the midst of the storm. I promise if you get me out of this, I will, blah, 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 right? So maybe you can relate to that, or you know maybe people have. What's interesting to me is this is after the storm. After the storm, they have seen his greatness. I think we begin to get a glimpse of what God is up to in regards to reaching out to others through Israel. Jonah, go to the pagans of Nineveh, warn them of my impending judgment. No. No. I'm going to go the opposite way. And on a boat full of people who don't know Yahweh, become a group of people who do know Yahweh. I love it. As we begin this journey through the book of Jonah, I'm reminded of our tendency to do similar things to what Jonah does here in chapter 1. We convince ourselves that if we do what the Lord desires for us to do, he will not allow us to experience life as we want to experience life, joy as we want to experience joy, goodness as we want to define goodness. But when we mistrust the goodness of God because of the circumstances of life, we oftentimes end up attempting to, and I use that word attempting to, because at the end of the day, you can actually see that you can't outrun him, right? Now, you may think that you can, but you can't. So that's the reason I say attempting to. We often end up running from the only one who has given you true goodness and given you, given me true life. And as I was just, I just had a couple of questions today as I was thinking through how to conclude our time together, just to begin to process on. Again, it's kind of hard in a book for some of you, again, that have grown up in around the church, like you know the story, you know how this is going to play out. And so sometimes it's hard not to run ahead of where they're going. But really, 7 weeks, we're gonna unpack it all and continue to talk about it. I hope you'll be here for all of it. But just for today, where we are today, based on what we're talking about this morning, I want to pose that question to you. Where are you currently mistrusting the goodness of God because you are looking at his goodness through your circumstances instead of through Jesus? Now, when I say instead of through Jesus, what I'm saying is that is the one who has given you life, true goodness. Where are you currently mistrusting or tempted to mistrust the goodness of God because you are looking at his goodness through your circumstances instead of through Jesus? I think that's a fair question for us to ponder and think through. Some of you, maybe it's this. Maybe some of you, like you've lived with yourself long enough, right? So you know the answer to this because you live with you. So what some of you could be saying is, well, currently, nowhere. That's fine. That's okay. But you also know you well enough to know that when you do, you know what it is. Because interestingly enough, if you look back over your life, you would go, it's kind of the same thing on the regular basis where I begin to mistrust the goodness of God. For some of you, it's not there's these 18 different things. For some of you, there's just a part of life. And when that part of life isn't going the way you think it should go, you find yourself questioning the goodness of God, mistrusting him. I'm reminded as I've been walking through this that God is very committed to putting his glory and power and name on display. Right? I mean, you do see that even in the first chapter here. With these sailors, like he is very committed to putting his glory and power and name on display as he continues to draw people to himself. And I know you're not a prophet, and I know I'm not a prophet, but what I would say is you can fast forward to 2019. If you're here today as a follower of Jesus, we all have an invitation to be involved in that as he directs and leads, right? I mean, this is just another one of those reminders of like what God's going to do. You've heard people say it before. It's not unique to me. Whatever God's going to do, he's going to do. I believe that. I'm also incredibly humbled and blown away by the fact that he would want to use me somehow in that, and he would want to use you somehow. Like that's crazy to me. It's crazy great. Crazy great. Love it. But I'm humbled by that. I want to be a part of that. I want to be in tune to that. And then the last thing I think just today as we wrap up is, what boat are you currently in with people who need to hear and know about Jesus? Because again, I think what's applicable to so many of us in the room today is that life is hard and things are going on. And I'm not saying again, and I tried to take a little time on it, I'm not saying that's a direct result of disobedience on your end. But the fact of the matter is, everybody in this room is currently around people who don't know Jesus, and you're in the middle of walking through life, and you have the opportunity with a sense of intentionality as you listen well to the Spirit of God who indwells you to be able to put the beauty and the hope and the power of the gospel on display where you are. As do I. What is our intentionality level in that regard? That they would know of Jesus Christ. Let me pray over you if I could. You can bow your heads and close your eyes. And the team's going to come up. We're going to sing another song or two together this morning before we conclude our time. Father God, I'm incredibly thankful for the opportunity to process through the book of Jonah over the next several weeks together. I think historically there have been some maybe many who have looked at the prophet Jonah and said, "Well, I don't get that." I pray that we'd be able to walk through this study and listen well to your spirit. Practical things you want to show us. But I do believe there are pieces of this that are incredibly relatable to our current day, our current moment, our lives. Practically today, I would ask that you would show us if there are places in our life where we're mistrusting your goodness, tempted to walk in the opposite direction, maybe some walking in the opposite direction. Others of us may be so focused on our own circumstances in life that we don't see the ramifications of what we're walking through in regards to how other people could see how you change all of life. If we were to live with more of a sense of intentionality in the places that you've put us and the things that we are walking through. So, Spirit of God, be so kind to enlighten our hearts and minds in that regard, and we will thank you for it.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. For more information about Summit Upstate and other available resources, check out our website at summitupstate.org.